Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are back once again to Sports Authority and other stuff, doing what we do every so often. And right now, man, we've got big things going on. We've got the NFL playoffs. We're down to the final four. This is when it gets really good. The NBA, we had a blowout last night with Cleveland taking on Golden State. Golden State taking Cleveland out to the woodshed, which really doesn't make a difference to me one way or the other. It's regular season basketball. Who cares? You got college basketball going on. I'm starting to get in the full swing. We're into the conference season. And hockey's going on. The Blackhawks are giving up their lead. Hopefully they can work their way back into the money or take that first place spot back over. But we're going to kick it off with a little football. Harris, what is going on, brother? How are you doing this evening?
Man, I'm doing great.
The Bulls are winning, so I'm in a good mood.
Yeah, I won't even bring up the other one. Yeah, Bulls are winning, and that's always a good thing. It's always good. Harris, the NFL playoffs looming upon us this weekend. We have New England and Pittsburgh. We have Atlanta and the Packers. Let's just start off by getting your pick. Who do you have?
Well, in the NFC, I'm going to take the Packers. I'm going to ride the hot Aaron Rodgers. They've already played Atlanta once. Atlanta got them down there in the dome earlier in a very tight game. And I just feel like, just like the Dallas game, this time Green Bay gets the better of them in a tight game. And in the AFC, surprisingly, I'm going to stick with Pittsburgh. That was my pick to win the Super Bowl. I'm not going to stop now. I think I saw some chinks in Brady's armor last week. I mean, you know, he did throw, you know, two picks after throwing two all year. I know that's a reach because we know Tom going to do what Tom does. But, you know, my only thought is Pittsburgh should have enough on offense. You have to wonder, you know, the hoodie's going to take something away. So he'll probably take away the running game and try to do whatever he can to Le'Veon Bell. But I look for Bell to be more of a factor in the passing game this week. I like Bell against the New England linebackers, and I'm expecting a big game from Antonio Brown, especially after, you know, what he did with the whole video thing this week. He sort of owes Tomlin and the boys. So I expect for him to step up and shock the world, and I have Pittsburgh winning by 7.
All right. I am with you on the Pittsburgh thing, but I am going to take Atlanta over Green Bay. I understand all the reasons why you're doing it. I can't argue with any of your reasons. I'm just going to ride with the other hot hand. I mean, both quarterbacks have been doing their thing. And as far as the Pittsburgh-New England game, you know, if there's a team that can go into New England and beat New England, it's Pittsburgh. They have
a
quarterback. What's that?
And I have ulterior motive also because I just don't want to see New England win, right? That's another reason.
Well, there's always that.
And that's another reason why I'm picking Green Bay, because I know there's not a chance in hell that Matt Ryan is going to beat Tom Brady, because the Matt Ryan game is coming. It hasn't happened yet, the playoffs, but he's going to have to prove to me that he's not going to have one of the Matt Ryan games.
Hopefully this is the year of the opposite effect, because I kept waiting for the Clemson game to show up as well. And it showed up early enough that they were able to stay in the hunt.
But they still had it.
The one thing about Pittsburgh that gives me faith that they can go in and give New England a game, is what I was getting ready to say, was that they have an experienced quarterback. They have an experienced running back, although he's not necessarily quote-unquote playoff experience, but he's not new to this. You have Antonio Brown. And then on defense, you don't necessarily have the big-name players that the Steelers have had in the past, but you still have leaders on that defense, and the defense got better as the year has gone on. And I would, you know, part of it is I think they can win. Another part of it goes to what you were saying. I just don't want New England to lose. So there's that.
Fair enough.
There's that. But I was looking at something, Parrot, today, actually. I'm trying to get up here. Got rid of it. But when you look at the playoff teams, the four playoff teams, and I'm sure you have the easy answer to this, what's the one thing that all these teams have?
Real good quarterback play?
Exactly. And I think, although I am of the belief, Parrot, that defense wins games, I'm also of the belief that with the exception of the Rex Grossman, with the exception of the, who else am I thinking of, Trent, what's my man's name, that led Baltimore when they won?
Oh, Trent Dilfer.
Trent Dilfer's of the world. There's very few times when you're going to get to the Super Bowl with a mediocre quarterback. And the times when you do it, the time that it's been done, has been because the defenses were really, like, not just good, but, like, all-time great good. You know, when I say all-time great, I don't necessarily mean best. I just mean really, really good, or at least the best in that season, or one of the best, you know, in a while. And that's the one thing that those teams had going. When you look at the final four today, I mean, this weekend, you have just the quick description. You got Matt Ryan, who hasn't really proven it necessarily in the playoffs yet, but he's a solid quarterback. He's a solid goal half. You don't know what I'm looking for, but the guy you pick to win the game, Aaron Rodgers, another
right
quarterback, and arguably one of the best to ever do it. But I'm looking here real quick. Last year, Perry, you had Denver, New England, Carolina, and Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the quarterbacks of those teams, and only Cam stands out as the one. But even Cam is good. Cam is good. He's a good quarterback. And they had a really good defense. The year before that,
right,
you had New England, Indianapolis, Seattle, and Green Bay. You're back to Aaron Rodgers. You're looking at Russ, who has become a franchise quarterback. You're looking at
mm-hmm.
Brady, and you're looking at was that Peyton last year, or was that my man that's in Indianapolis now? That's 2014.
2014. That should have been. I believe Manning was in Denver by then.
Denver. Okay, but even still, my man is a franchise quarterback. I mean, his name is slipping my mind, but he's a franchise.
Andrew Luck.
Luck. There you go. The year before that, Denver, New England, Seattle, San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who San Francisco's
right
quarterback was. I don't know if that was the last.
It was Cap. It
was
that
Kaepernick.
The last? It was
yeah,
Kaepernick.
That was the last year that Kaepernick was really good. But even Kaepernick that
right
year had a good year, and they were running that kind of a, at the time it was considered a gimmicky offense. But the bottom line here is that you consistently see New England. You see Denver. You see Seattle. Before that, you're looking at Baltimore, great defense, New England, San Francisco, and Atlanta. So I guess the point that I'm trying to get to is that you don't have to have a great quarterback to get there, but it damn sure helps when you have a good, at least a good quarterback, at least a serviceable quarterback.
You have to
so
have
when
a
you
good quarterback, but the difference, but the thing with the great quarterback is, if you have a great quarterback, see, now with a good quarterback, right, you might be able to make it for 1 year. You know, we've seen the Trent Dilfers of the world win a Super Bowl. You know, we've seen guys like that. But when you have the great quarterbacks like an Aaron Rodgers, you're in the hunt every year. And that's
and
that
like
you can't,
that New England and the Pittsburghs
make
of the world. Yep.
Exactly. That's why we see the same thing. You know, and it's like somebody called one of the guys in the sports group, Blake Washington, made a good, you know, description there because he said that Kansas City was the Memphis Grizzlies of the NFL. And he was absolutely correct because I feel like Alex Smith is just a limited dude and he's just good enough to maybe not lose the game for you but never good enough to win it. And, you know, those type of quarterbacks put extra and strain on the game plan because they're so limited. You know, that's why if you can get a true, let's say there's two types of quarterbacks. There's franchise quarterbacks, and then there's quarterbacks of a franchise. But if you can get a no-doubt franchise quarterback, you put yourself in such a great position for, you know, a decade. You can be a good competitive football team.
That's the idea. I mean, that's really all you want is to give yourself a chance. If you're a fan, you really just want your quarterback to give you a chance. Unfortunately for us here in Chicago, we have a quarterback who has all of the tools. And Jay Cutler is a perfect example. Like I've said to people before, you know, skill set. You know, you could be talking about basketball, and I could talk about a guy's skill set. Can he run? Can he jump? Can he do the skill thing? And so Jay Cutler's a perfect guy, skill set. He can run a little bit. He can throw. Strong arm. He, you know, plays hurt. But he just never puts it together. He had like one, you know, good year in Denver, which got him the big contract with the Bears. Maybe two good years. But since he's been with the Bears, he just couldn't put it together. And not to say that Jay Cutler is the bane of our existence. Jay Cutler is not the reason why the Bears have been bad. But he's one of the reasons that they haven't been good. I think that's a fair way to say it. He's not the reason we've been bad, but he's one of the reasons we haven't been good. And if we've learned anything about the NFL just looking at history, it's that having that quarterback goes a long way. And as you said, Eric, doesn't have to be great, but he has to be good. Yeah, he has to be good. Doesn't have to be great, but he has to be good. So, going back to last week's game, were there any? I guess was there any surprise to you with the way last week turned out?
No. To me, they all went the way. Well, you know, I picked all the teams to win, which I'm sure most of us did. It was pretty much a gimme week, except for maybe the Dallas Green Bay game. But I just felt like you said, it was Green Bay's time. I knew it would be a tight game. But one thing I did learn is Dak Prescott impressed me in that loss. You know, because he stepped up and he played good ball. And if there was any doubt in, you know, Cowboy Nation's mind, you know, that's the guy for your future. Because a lot of times you want to see a guy do it when the lights are the brightest before you really go ahead on and anoint him. But he stepped up, he did his thing, and so did Zeke. It's just Aaron Rodgers just did. You know, we're Bear fans, so we're sort of used to this. We're sort of used to third and 12, and we got him on the ropes. And if we can get a stop, we can actually beat Green Bay. And this sucker, you know, avoids the sack and rolls to his left and hits Randall Cobb in the middle of the field. I mean, we see it twice a year, so we're used to this thing. But everybody else is seeing these throws he makes. That throw that he made to Cook, you know, not a Hail Mary, I think, that the media sort of overhyped him. Because, I mean, it's a Hail Mary. You're just throwing a doggone ball up and praying somebody catch it. Not a lot of skill to it. You know, hey, go to the corner of the end zone. I'm going to throw it high. But, yeah, you know, it is what it is. But that throw, there's not many guys in the NFL that can make that throw on the move like he did. And, you know, he basically took that game from Dallas. Because I think if they go into overtime, Dallas wins. Because Green Bay's defense was on life preserve there. They were just about to tap out. As far as Kansas City, like I said, Kansas City. That's sort of what they do. You know, like I said, they're just like Memphis Grizzlies, like Blake said, good enough to always be in a playoff hunt. But do you ever go into the playoffs going, man, this could be Kansas City year? Denver's defense, Pittsburgh's defense stepped up. New England game. I think we all saw that coming. Brock isn't a good quarterback, and New England just sort of wore him down. I mean, they got issues with the quarterback there in Texas. I don't know what they're going to do. I was sort of looking at their cap situation, thinking that like $24 million, and I was just looking because I really do like the Boye kid, and they've already paid a couple of other corners. So unless they cut the old guy, Jonathan Joseph, he really should hit the market because they also have to take care of Hopkins. And the other game, Atlanta-Seattle, I think Seattle's to the point to where their run is very close to being over, and it might be time for a mini rebuild, if that makes sense.
No, I can see Pete Carroll getting out while the getting is good.
I can see it.
I'm not saying he is. I'm simply saying I can see it. I wouldn't be surprised if Pete Carroll was gone in the next year. Not right now. I'm not saying he'd leave this year, but in the next year.
This year.
So I can see Pete getting out of there.
Well, the one thing about Seattle,
he's an old dude. Exactly. That's my point.
When he leaves, he's gonna retire. Yeah, when he leaves,
isn't he around 70?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's getting up there. I can see him saying, "Man, I'm not trying to do a rebuild. I'm not trying to put myself through that." But then again, Pete's a vibrant 70-year-old dude. He's not the average 70-year-old cat. So he could prove us wrong, coach. For he could be a Dick Vermeil. As far as like coaching at age, he could stick around. You never know. But to your point, you can see defensively, Seattle is getting old and they're getting injured. People aren't scared of Richard Sherman the way they were scared of Richard Sherman. Their safety can't stay healthy. And at the point that your defense is no longer getting it done, you have to rely on your offense. And, I mean, Seattle's offense isn't bad, but their running backs couldn't stay healthy. Their wide receivers are actually pretty good, quietly. Their wide receivers are pretty good. And their receivers are pretty good. I mean, Paul Richardson,
no, okay, man.
Baldwin. You don't like Richardson?
Paul Richardson, I mean, he made a couple catches, but I wouldn't call him pretty good. He made a couple nice grabs. When I say a receiver's pretty good, that means the DBs are taking hold of some extra tape at night and maybe sleeping a little, having a restless night of sleep. And I don't think Paul Richardson is there yet.
I think that's coming. I really, truly think that's coming.
But right now, he's not here or hurt. Now, Angry Doug Baldwin gets down every week. You can count on Angry Doug because he's always angry.
Either way,
that's just how it plays.
Either way, offensively, they're going to have to put up points. So the question for you, Paris, before we get off the subject, is going into, I want to say next year, let's look into the future with Seattle. Do you see Russell Wilson as a quarterback that can put up points consistently? Because, I mean, he played hurt a little bit this year, and I don't think it's fair to necessarily judge him on his early season production long-term. It's fair to judge him this year, but long-term, I think it's fair to remember that he was a little banged up. Do you think going forward he can be that kind of dude? Can he be that dude?
Yeah, I think he was, 31-6 last year for our touchdowns and interceptions, over 4,000 yards. So, yeah, he can sling it. I mean, there's not, I don't know if he'll ever pass for 5,000 yards like Drew Brees, but you could definitely run every play in a playbook with Russell Wilson. So if they have to change philosophy a little bit more, I think he's up to the task. The key with that is going to be getting a O-line because the O-line really did hurt them. And the Jimmy Graham experiment, I don't want to call it a failure, but – I don't think the results have been what you sort of expected.
Here's the thing, though. I kind of expected it because let me say where I expected it from. I expected it from the standpoint that they said they weren't going to go to Jimmy Graham a lot. And we were all kind of like, they're just throwing BS out there. They're just trying to throw people off the scene. They told us they weren't going to use Jimmy Graham like that. None of us believed it. So I think going into next year, I think they have to focus on Jimmy Graham. They have to put Jimmy Graham in a to be the Jimmy Graham we knew, or to be done. He looked relatively healthy. He looked like he could still get up and down the field. Hands are still there. I just think they need to focus on making sure he gets the rock.
He had a big injury coming out of the
knee.
I never expected him to put up the production that he did in New Orleans because, they throw the ball like 700 times a game.
He was their number one target, right.
Yeah, it's too many games to where he's just isn't present. Like this game, I think he had two catches. You know, I remember watching Green Bay early this year.
How many targets did he have would be my question.
See, this is the thing. When it comes to that, I believe it goes hand in hand. And I believe Russell Wilson is a good quarterback. We all agree with that. So I also believe that Russell Wilson at times is looking for him, and Jimmy Graham just isn't getting open. And that's why I say I think he might have lost a little something there on the operating table to maybe he doesn't have that step that he used to have to separate. Because there's too many games this year where that guy was
eight surgeries, he definitely left something on the table. Yeah, you always leave something on the table. You've had a couple surgeries yourself.
It's just a matter of how much. Some guys might leave a little bit. You know, some guys leave a little bit more. You know, Adrian Peterson looked like he didn't leave nothing, you know, when he first came back. But I think he left a little something there, and he isn't the athlete that he used to be. You know, so I think now I tell you what, though, is when you say that, I'm just sitting here thinking. And if the Richardson kid develops, right, and if the Lockett kid comes back healthy, and if that third down running back, Prosite, comes back healthy, you could be looking at a real nice offense because they do have some nice pieces because those guys are all young. And they're all fast. And you put them with Baldwin. So, yes, you might see Seattle have to start to change their styles because the defense just, you know, it isn't what it used to be. And it was a historic defense. And most of the time, historic-type defenses, they usually get one Super Bowl. You know, when you look at the Baltimore, the Chicago, the Tampa Bay, they usually – because it takes time to build it up. It takes time to draft. All the talent matures. And then what happens after you win? Usually injuries and free agent defections set in. You know, you get a little bit older. Because if you look at Seattle, like you said, the safeties, you know, Chancellor's always hurt.
Yeah. But just going back to the point, the last point you made right there, that's a key that a lot of people forget. And it's really it's more prevalent now. But we saw it all the way back to 1986 when the Bears won the Super Bowl, or 85, when the Bears won the Super Bowl going into the 85-86 season. And then you had guys that were sitting out. You had guys that were holding out. And then after they won, you had guys that just left. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I noticed it. You know, I was 16. I wasn't really paying attention to stuff like that until it was my team. And now you move forward to today. And man, if your team wins the Super Bowl, it's a gift and a curse. It's a gift and a curse unless you're New England. They seem to be the one team that has been able to retool on a consistent basis. What is it, six championships in a row? They've made six conference championship games in a row now? Is it six?
I'd have to think, but I'm trying to think when the last time they got put out early because they always win that division, which means they always seem like they have to play one game before they're in the, you know, the championship game. Yeah, that sounds accurate.
I mean, they're the one team that's been able to, with consistency, replace guys. And, you know, they have those getting rid of them 1 year, you know, 1 year soon rather than 1 year late philosophy. But it's not easy. It's not easy. They make it look easy, but it's not
right.
Easy.
Before
we keep it moving, if you're listening on the website, give us a call, 347-637-3859. You can always check out the website if you're listening to us online already. If you got to press the one to get in on the conversation. Where do you want to go next? I mean, we got NBA basketball. Chris Paul's out 6 to 8 weeks. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I saw that, but I think it's what's going on in New York with Melo. And,
okay.
You know, Phil Jackson is like a weird dude because Phil Jackson is now, you know, from all the smart people, what they're saying is that, you know, him and Melo probably had a beat today, and he asked Melo, does he want to be in New York? And all I'm thinking is, if you didn't want the guy, why did you sign him 2 years ago? Why did you sign him 2 years ago, and then why did you give him a no-trade clause? I mean, it's like you signed him, and then you double down on him. You know the guy loves New York. He wants to be in New York. He also loves his money, but he wants to be in New York. If you didn't want him, you could have worked outside it. Exactly. He could have signed that. You could have worked outside of trades with, you know, Chicago, you know, Houston, you know, a couple teams. Maybe you work out a sign and trade and get you a couple pieces back, maybe draft picks, or maybe you just want the cap space moving forward. But that was the time to do that. Now here it is, 2 years later, and you start off the season, you're calling them a ball hog. You know, it's just certain things that executives, it's just, he's like Jerry Jones. You know, it's just certain things you don't see NBA executives doing in the press. I can't remember the last time I seen an NBA GM in the press taking shots at his star player. You know, who does that? And it's almost to the point where it seems like he's trying to force Melo out in a weird Phil Jackson-ish sort of way. So it'll be interesting moving forward. Melo once again said he wants to stay. So it's going to be interesting watching that team as they move forward to see if, you know, they can gel, because they're not having a good year. You know, they just got over the whole Derrick Rose fiasco. Courtney Lee was benched. After he gets benched, he goes on Instagram and puts up a picture of the Dumb and Dumber characters. Of course, he did what all athletes do. He taken down after a while. You know, who was that a shot at? Was that a shot at Hornacek, another coach, the Knicks organization, maybe players? Who knows?
Hornacek feel together? Dumb and Dumber?
What did you say now?
Hornacek and Phil as a tag team?
Yeah, I don't know, you know, but he obviously was shooting at somebody. You know, he just didn't happen to put that up after the day that he gets, you know, relegated to the – well, I don't want to say bench. He just lost his starting job, but he still played. But, they started Baker over. So, you know, it's interesting times in New York. And the Noah signing is looking real bad. So Phil has no one to blame but himself.
But let me throw this out there and tell me your opinion. If Phil didn't want Melo, he didn't have to resign him. I'm not saying that your theory is wrong, because, hell, it's just an opinion. None of us know. But
right.
If he really didn't want Melo, I don't think he would have gone through the trouble of re-signing. I think what's happened is that reality has set in. It was a good idea at the time. You know, A, he was keeping him from coming to the Bulls. I think Phil still has heat for the Bulls. B, it was a good PR move to make sure Melo came back. If you feel you don't want to come in immediately, let your marquee guy go. And now reality is set in. They signed Derrick Rose. They signed Joe Noah. And now they're just bad. And then on top of that, Porzingis has stepped his game up to the mix as well. Porzingis has basically put himself in a position to say, hey, I'm the dude. I am the dude. You put all of that in a pot, mix it up, you got problems. You got a GM who doesn't know what he wants to do. You have a star player who's not getting it done. You have a young player who's on the come up. Oh, by the way, Knicks fans hated that draft pick. We laughed at it. And now you put all that together and you've just got complete chaos. And then Phil hates to lose. Also, Phil is heavy handed. If you're Phil, what do you do with the situation?
Well, honestly, you know, if I were to re-sign the guy, and let's just say I would have been, okay, let's keep him. All right, fair enough. It can happen, you know. All right, you want to keep Melo. I definitely don't think I give him a no-trade clause. That probably would have caused negotiations to break down, because I'm not putting myself in that box. It's only maybe I can count on one hand players in the NBA that I'm going to put myself in that position with, honestly. And you're going to have to be a young horse like a Anthony Davis or, you know, Kevin Durant, someone like that to even mention that to you, you know, to even bring that up. I would not do that. Now, you're at the point where he has a no-trade clause, and if you think about it, who would Melo want to accept the trade to? Cleveland? They're not going to do that because of Melo's contract, and they're not breaking up. You know, him and Brian might be boys, and they might like to go on banana boats together, but Brian isn't stupid. He's not going to break up what he has. You know, they got a good thing going there. Let's not get cute. Dude does it stupid. Then you have the Clippers. You know, would the Clippers do it for Blake Griffin? I don't think so. But I'm sure that that's a you know, that well, that's what I've been hearing all day on the radio, too. It's sort of like the obvious choice. So, Corey, honestly, I think Phil is sort of stuck. Because if the meeting goes the way Ramona Shelburne said, yeah, he is stuck. You know, Ramona Shelburne, who I think is a hack reporter, because she said something real stupid last year that I'll never forget. And I always thought she was sort of a bum, but after she said that, I'm like, okay, she's sort of like
hold on, a homer bum. What did she say? I need to know what she said.
Last year, it was they were talking about Kevin Durant, right? And they were messing with her because Kevin Durant had not set up an appointment with the Lakers in free agency after she had said that he would talk to the Lakers, right? And she said, well, the only reason that he has to set up a meeting with the Lakers is because, unlike these other organizations, the Lakers aren't going to break the rules and talk to him before he's a free agent. They're going to wait till actual free agency starts, then they're going to contact him. And I remember Brian Windhorst looking at her like, did you really just say that? And I was like, that was part Homer, and that was part dumb. But anyway, the day she said that, you know, the meeting was contentious. But I've heard a couple reporters say that LaMelo did tell Phil again, you know, hey, I'm here. This is where I want to be. So Phil is stuck, like you said. He's just stuck, you know, with $25 million in LaMelo. And LaMelo has a trade kicker where I believe he gets a 10 or 15% raise if he's traded. And, by the way, Melo is shooting his lowest field goal percentage, I believe, since his rookie year.
Do you know how many years he has left on his contract?
I want to say two. Maybe three.
It's a tough call, man. I mean, New York is in a tough spot.
It should be three years. Wait a minute, it should be three years. The Bulls could only offer him four. It was under the old CBA, and that was 5 years. I'm sure they gave him a 5-year deal, and that was two summers ago. So yeah, let's put him in. After this year, two more years left. That's what I'll go with.
Melo has been a great He's been a superstar. Let's go with that. He's been a superstar because his defense is a lot. He's been a superstar. I'll give him the label. I don't want to say he's great. He's been a superstar. And he's one of those cases, Paris. We've had conversations in the past, you and I, about contracts. You want to pay a guy for what he's done, or are you going to pay a guy for what he's going to do? Melo is a what he did guy right at this point. The money that Melo is making now is not because he deserves it now. You have to ask yourself, if you're one of the teams out there looking at a trade, do we want a guy that's done it but ain't doing it? And that's kind of the question that a lot of these teams are going to be in. And then the backside of that, Paris, is the money. Do we want a guy that's done it for the money? And New York ain't gonna give them away cheap. You're not gonna get them. You're not gonna come in and you know half-ass New York in a deal. New York's not gonna give up Melo for a second-round pick. They're not gonna give them up for a late first-round pick. They're gonna go to somebody that has talented players, and they're gonna say, "Hey, we want that guy. You know, whoever that guy is, whoever that guy is. We want that guy. And I don't know. Is there a team that you can see them making that trade?
That's it right now. Wanting
Melo, I guess, is a better way to say it.
Because if you're Melo, you want to be in New York. You're not leaving New York. The only way you're going to go somewhere is you're either going to go to play with one of your boys or you're going to go to, like, a championship-type team. No championship team has the room or would take it. Now, maybe OKC to make a play for.
Okay.
You know, maybe he wouldn't mind joining forces with Russ. You know, what does Phil want back? I mean, you're locked in at Noah, so you don't want Steven Adams. I mean, do you take Cantor and, you know, Oladipo? I don't know, but, you know, maybe OKC to be, you know, that type of squad.
Well,
that's
I don't know, Derek. I don't really know what they're in a tight spot, bro. That's all
right.
They're in a tight spot because Phil cannot win this. I don't see a way where Phil comes out of this with a win. If you trade Melo, fans are gonna go crazy. You lose. If you trade Melo and don't bring back enough, you lose. If you keep Melo and the team loses, you lose. I'm trying to find the win here for Phil, and quite honestly, Terrence, I just don't see it. I don't see the victory.
The only win Phil could get is if he traded and got a young piece, and the rest of the pieces he got, he could, were all expiring deals. So this summer, he goes into free agency with an extra, let's say, $10 to $15 million in cap space. And a young player to deal around.
And Derrick Rose comes off the books as well, doesn't he?
Yes.
Okay, that's more money in the pot.
But see, that's the whole other decision. What do they do with Derrick Rose? I mean, you sign Derrick Rose, you let Derrick Rose walk. I mean, you know, you gave up some assets to get him. And if you let him walk, who are you going to get to replace him?
And just to go back a little bit, that was one of the reasons I was, I don't want to say glad, but that's one of the reasons I was cool with the Bulls moving him. Glad would be a little bit strong, but I was cool with it. You know, saying glad sounds like I was trying
right.
to push it out. But when you have a guy that believes he's a superstar, has been the MVP, but can't stay healthy, now here was my fear, that Derrick Rose would stay in Chicago, play most of the season, and be decent. And he's been decent with the Knicks. Because then, once their contract is up, now Bulls management is screwed. Because the fans are going, that's Derrick Rose. That's the homeboy. You got to max him out. If you do, and Derrick Rose gets hurt, you lose. If you don't, and he walks, you lose. And you get nothing in return. It was just a no-win situation for the Bulls. Moving him was the best possible scenario in my mind. I don't know what your opinion was. In my
right.
mind, moving him was good for everybody. New York's in the same situation. They're going to be damned if they do and damned if they don't. Derrick Rose hasn't had a good enough year to demand max money. Derrick Rose has said he wants max money.
Yeah.
But if the Knicks get rid of Melo, will they give it to him? If the Knicks move Melo, will they? I mean, because now you're just substituting money for money. Now you just slide Rose in the Melo spot monetarily. Slide Rose in there, and you still have Melo's money. You still have money for, you know, one of the guys is going to be gone. I don't want to say I feel bad. I don't want to say I feel for Phil because he put himself in this position.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, you brought out a scenario where Phil could win, and that's if everything goes right. that's like the perfect storm. I don't see how Phil comes out of this ahead. And not saying that he can't turn it around. I'm simply saying as far as these particular situations we're referring to, I don't see how he comes out. Now, let's unless you have something else to say about this, let's shift over to the Chris Paul issue. You're
okay.
more up on NBA than I am. So I want to give the floor to you. What does Chris Paul's injury mean to the Clippers? What does it mean to the West that he's gone from 6-8?
It means that they're going to most likely finish 7th in the West, even though when you look at it, it's weird because usually with one of those guys out, the Clippers have still managed to play decent ball. And what's crazy is I believe the Clippers so far in 2017, they're undefeated. I believe they're 8-0 or 7-0 now. So they were actually, you know, playing good basketball. Now it means that most likely they're going to finish 7th. Best case scenario, probably 6th in the West.
Let me just give you this. Let me give you these numbers to go along with what you're saying, real quick. Right now they're 29 and 14, 7 games back. They're 4th in the West.
Right.
The 7th team in the West is Oklahoma City with 25. The 8th is Portland with 18 wins. So I just want to give you those numbers.
You know what? I think they finished 6th. I'll put them at 6th, and if so, that'll be great because now we get a first-round matchup of Houston and the Clippers, and that would be a real good one. That would be a good one because I think they really could upset Houston in the first round. So that would be real good. It's just a tough blow. You know, as a Bulls fan, it's sort of hard for me to really cry for anybody when it comes to injuries. I'm sort of like suck it up. You know, I've sort of been there before. But if I was a Clippers fan, you know, that organization, those fans have to feel like they're always getting kicked in the face. And they know that this year, this summer, with Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, and J.J. Redick all being free agents, you know, the NBA is weird. You never know what's going to happen. You know, people all day have been, you know, who you choose. Do you keep CP2? You know, do you go with Blake, the younger guy? Or, you know, do you think keep Chris Paul because he's more of a winner? And, I mean, you never know. Both those guys can leave. Both those guys can stay. You know, that's what keeps NBA GMs up late at night because you never really know until, you know, it's that time. My gut is that one will stay. Think it'll be Chris Paul. That's just right. My gut, you know, and that's all it is. It's just my gut feel that it'll be Chris Paul and Blake will end up leaving for greener pastures.
Yeah, I think Blake is, and again, this is based off nothing, but I think Blake is ready to move on specifically if they don't win. You know, if they win a title, then, you know, it is what it is. I don't think any of us see them winning a title this year. I mean, path is there. I just don't know how they get past the Rockets, Spurs, Warriors, and if they happen to get past all of them, please. I can see the path. I just don't see them getting through. But they won 7 in a row. I think that was the point you were making earlier. They won 7 in a row.
Yeah.
If they can stay afloat 6 to 8 weeks, you know, knowing Chris Paul, he'll try to come back in 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, you know, I can definitely see him being back in I'll say 5 to 6 weeks, more so than 8 weeks. I've never done the ligament thing. I've done a lot of stuff, 8 knee surgeries, a couple foot surgeries, you know, but I've never done the finger thing. And you're a point guard, you need your fingers. And anybody that's played basketball knows it's nothing for you to run your finger into somebody or to hyperextend your finger or bend your finger back. So I'm sure he'll come back, play with something on his hand if he can, and get back early. We'll see. We'll see how that plays out. I want to bring something else up to you, NBA-wise. The East, as you know, over the last few years, you've had the East-West conversation about, you know, the West. And, of course, because the West was dominating record-wise, people started saying that they should change how they do the playoffs and this, that, and third. Well, this year, the 8th seed in the West is 18.5. 8th seed in the East is 20.20. I still think the West is the stronger conference team for team. But here's I can't remember who I picked as far as the back half of the West. I have to look. I got right now they're sitting at the 60, 25-18. And Utah, who I think was the darling going in, I think everybody started reading the newspaper clipping, so to speak. A lot of people had Utah up there. Is there any surprises right now when you're looking at the West? You got Golden State, San Antonio, Houston, the Clippers, the Jazz, Grizzlies, Thunder, Blazers, and then on the outside looking, you have Denver, the Nuggets, and the Pelicans. Is there any surprises?
The only real surprise is that Houston is up as high as they are. I mean, Memphis, everybody sort of had Memphis going back to the playoffs because that's what they sort of do, and Utah's been beat up. I mean, Utah, I think your star lineup might have played about 3 to 4 games this year, and that's no exaggeration. And where they're sitting, they're primed to make a nice run in the second half. Utah's legit. They really are a good team. Second-round type team, not a conference final or championship threat, but, you know they have some good pieces over there. Portland is worse than I thought they would be, and I had the Pelicans making the playoffs, but they started out 0-8, and they just can't seem to recover. You know, they're having a hard time sort of gaining traction. They've been playing better. I think they're basically about a 500 team, a little bit over 500 ever since that horrible start they had. But otherwise, no real surprises for me out west. It's sort of, you know, business as usual almost.
I will, as far as the Pelicans go, you and I were talking on the phone. And you remember when I said Anthony Davis can't stay healthy? And
yes, he hurt again.
He hurt again.
Yes.
And when you take Anthony Davis off of the Pelicans, Anthony Davis on the Pelicans makes the Pelicans a formidable team. It doesn't make them a great team. It doesn't even necessarily make them a quote-unquote good team. But it makes them a formidable team because Anthony Davis is going to put in work. Without Anthony Davis, they are just bad.
Trash. Yes.
I'm looking at the roster. Oh, they're bad. I mean, they're bad, dude. There's guys on this roster that I've never heard of.
And, you know, I really don't know full details of their cap space. But all I know is in a summer where you obviously need help, you lose Ryan Anderson and you lose Eric Gordon. Okay, fair enough. But the only players they were linked to are the two guys they signed, which is Etwan Moore and Solomon Hill. And, I mean, they went after Solomon Hill early sort of in free agency and hard. And I was thinking, is this the same Jag Solomon Hill from the Pacers that I've been looking at for the past couple of years? And, yes, it was the same guy. I mean, I'm sure Will Demps knows more about basketball than me, but I really didn't understand that because you can't go into free agency and come out of it with Etwan Moore and Solomon Hill.
Those are basically cast off from other teams that aren't that good.
Those are borderline. They are borderline rotational guys. That's what they are. They're borderline rotation guys, but they have that Omer Asik deal, which is an albatross, which is probably one of the worst contracts signed when you look at it now, because they can't get rid of him, and he doesn't. The Omer Asik, he doesn't even like play anymore. He's like bench.
Dude, I was just looking at that. Yeah, I was just looking at that.
You know, he doesn't even play anymore.
This dude is making $9.9 million.
Yes.
9.9. He has bricks for hands. Wasn't that one of the reasons why the Bulls didn't win a series? Was his hand? What happened when he got the ball under the basket? Instead of going up and dunking it or something, he tried to dribble it.
I believe in a Philly series after Noah got hurt, I think he had some not too flattering moments, along with that bum C.J. Watson, who I hated. Yeah, I don't even want to talk about that series. But, yeah.
And for the record, you know, he had 4 years remaining on his contract.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're bad, and they're stuck. But you can't get rid of that. And he's 30 years old. you can't get rid of that $9.9 million contract for 4 more years. It's going to be at least 3 more years before they can get rid of that one.
Yeah, that's a bad one.
Very bad one. But let's keep it moving here. We're down our last few minutes here. Let's go to the East here. Are there any surprises for you in the East? You have Cleveland, Toronto, Boston. I think most people had that, something like that, you know, Cleveland, Toronto, Boston. The Hawks, the Wizards, I will admit I did not have the Wizards that high up. The Pacers, the Bulls, I had the Bulls at 6 or 7. I can't remember which one. And the Bucks, I had the Bucks up there. Are there any surprises in those 8 for you?
Not really. I mean, besides a couple of teams up at the top, everyone else really is sort of interchangeable down there at the bottom.
Right.
It's going to make for good basketball, I mean, coming down the stretch because, you know, some game against Detroit in this first week of March is going to be real important, you know, and a game against a team like Orlando will also mean a lot. So that's a good part for the, I guess, you know, for the NBA because it should draw up interest. But nothing really has surprised me. You know, everybody's – well, I'd say Indiana. Because Indiana was a team that a lot of people thought would possibly, you know, fit as second. And it's taken them a while to sort of get their legs up underneath them. It sort of coincided with them sort of Monte Ellis getting hurt and sort of becoming like the backup dude. Because he really just doesn't have it anymore. And they actually play a little bit better, I think, when Al Jefferson isn't available either. It's amazing how you make these additions during the summer. And then once the bullets start flying, you're like, okay, this isn't going to work like we thought it would. I'm still waiting on Boston. But, you know, everybody sort of assumes. When I look at Boston, I think if I was Danny Ainge, I wouldn't even attempt to trade my draft picks. Why not just hold on to your draft picks? Keep drafting young, good players, and you got enough money this summer to sign a max free agent. I mean, you got
would,
the next pick,
seem,
probably.
I mean,
that's,
I don't
I
think
mean,
they
you
really
know,
have
sort
to
of,
make moves. I agree with you. They're not in a position where they have to make moves.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you get a chance to get, you know, the next might mess around, and you could possibly mess around and have the number one pick in the draft. You want to, you know, give that up? I wouldn't.
No,
I pretty much hold what I have and just play this thing out. You know, unless it was an offer that I, you know, couldn't refuse. Otherwise, I just keep what I have.
Hold court, ride it out, see how it plays out. That would seem to be the smart move. The question is, will Danny Ainge get nervous? You know, Danny Ainge. You know, he pulled off a couple quick moves in his career as GM.
Danny Ainge might have sort of painted himself into a corner because he was the guy that was basically boasting about how he was going to turn all these picks into a star. And he's one of those, you know how they talk about how, like, most GMs like to keep everything, you know, tight vest. You never really hear about, you know, possible deals you'll never hear from. But they always say that Danny Ainge is one of those guys that leaks information to the press because he sort of wants the Boston, you know, fan base to know, hey, I'm trying. You know, it might not have worked out, but, you know, I'm definitely trying up here. And he sort of promised that he was going to turn those picks into a star. So you're right. Maybe he does sort of pull the trigger on something because I don't think that Al Horford signed him. Was what they
had in mind when he said star player.
I don't think so.
But I'll say this for what it's worth. You've heard it, I've heard, we've both used the phrase. Winning cures everything. They're third in the East right now, buys him time. He doesn't have to do anything right now. I think if they get to the playoffs, if they win a series, maybe two, they somehow make it to the conference championship, I think that buys him time, and I think that gives him the opportunity to not move his picks. Because I think if you were to ask Danny Ainge, he'd tell you, I'm really not in a rush to move these picks.
Right.
I really kind of want to bring in some more young talent, and then once I get the young talent, see if I can parlay something into a star player. Star players just don't come along often. And the NBA, I should say, unlike the NFL, 11th pick in the draft really doesn't mean much from a guaranteed standpoint. You could have the 9th pick and the 11th pick in the draft, and they could both be busts. Not like the NFL where you got a better chance of getting a guy that's going to come in and produce, especially with, you know, all the kids coming out, the Euro players. You just don't know. So teams aren't really running to trade star players in the NBA for draft picks. They want proven commodities. So the question I have for you, Paris, before we get ready to get out of here real quick, we're down to our last 4 minutes. What proven commodities do they have, or do they have a proven commodity that, in your opinion, can bring back a star player?
Well, for them, it would all be about draft picks and maybe a young guy. Because if they're going to trade with somebody, somebody would be trading them a star, superstar-type player. So that team would probably want back the draft picks and maybe a young piece like a Jaylen Brown. You know, that's probably what they want. For instance, you know, we talked about, you know, what Phil Jackson is. You know, depending on their cap space, that would be like a win-win. You go to Boston, hey, you want Melo? Great. We want the next two picks, Jaylen Brown and Avery Bradley. Sure, Danny Ainge would say that's too much, but hey, that's actually where I would start out with. That would be the type of deal where the Knicks would win, because now you get two high picks, you can rebuild, and you have yet another young guy. You know, even when they've mentioned the Jimmy Butlers and the Paul Georges, it's always been centered around those draft picks and maybe Avery Bradley or Jaylen Brown. They mentioned the other guy, what's the Goon point guard from Oklahoma State? Can't think of his name now. They mentioned that guy, but if I was the team,
Marcus,
I'd be like, nah,
Marcus Smart.
Yeah, Marcus Smart. Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, I don't want anything with Tucson here, so he can stay there. So, yeah. But if I talk to Danny Ainge, I only want two things from that team, two players, either Jaylen Brown, either Avery Bradley, because his contract is pretty much dirt cheap, and those two first-round picks. That's what I want. That's what you're looking for. Because if you're going that route, like I said, you're rebuilding. And that's something they talked about this summer, and now they changed the CBA to where this summer now teams can offer these guys these big extensions. And that's why they say Sacramento's not trading DeMarcus Cousins. Because this summer they're planning to offer him that $200 million extension and see where that goes. Now, if he says no, all bets are off. Same thing with Paul George. Because Paul George is going into the last year of his deal. Now, I'm sure Larry Bird is going to try to extend him. And Paul George says, let's play it out another year. Now that's when the rumor mill might start. And if you're Larry Bird, you might think, okay, do I want to go through this sort of quote-unquote lame duck year? You know, what do I think? You know, I'm Indiana, so if I lose Paul George, who the heck am I going to replace him with? And when you look on that roster, there's no – you have Miles Turner, but that's it.
All right.
So
it is time for us to get out of here, man. Give me your closing thoughts real quick, 30 seconds. Closing thoughts, what you got?
Antonio Brown, that was an idiot move. You know better. You're too old to be on social media like a teenage girl hiding around a corner taping a conversation that your coach is having. What in your mind made you think that that would be cool? At some point in time, conversation has to kick in. You have to go, I shouldn't be doing this. Not only is it something you should have done, it's something that the NFL can fine you for, because you can't go on social media 90 minutes before a game, and it's a certain amount of time till after the game. So you might get fined by the NFL, you might get fined by the team. And how does that make you look at the team leader that instead of paying attention to your coach after the game with all your other teammates, you're around the corner like a giggling little girl having the time of your life on Facebook Live?
You, You didn't care that I said 30 seconds, did you?
Nah, I had to get that out.
I was sitting here like, oh, my man ain't going to stop in 30 seconds. I don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah, I had to get that out. My bad. It's all good.
I'll say this, and then I'll be done. I agree with you. You cannot, if you're, you don't have to be the team leader. You can't. Players have cried to the media that the locker room is our sanctuary. It's our place of peace, our zen. This is our home. We don't even want y'all in here. But then you turn around and you broadcast everything that happens in the locker room out to social media, and then it just happens to be, you know, if the Patriots, and the Patriots are a good enough team that they don't need it, but if they choose to, they can take it as bulletin board material. You don't put your coach in that. What if coach starts cussing and screaming and saying negative things about the Patriots?
Exactly.
You know, not even that he means them, but that's what coaches do. Coaches are going to tell you, man, that team sucks. They're scared of us. They don't want to see us. Dude, you cannot broadcast that live. If you want to videotape it, record it, look at it, and then say, this is safe, that's one thing. I still don't agree with it, but it's safe. When Coach Tomlin was talking, he thought he was talking to his guy. He didn't know he was talking to the group. So with that said, Paris, we are going to get out of here. Next week we will be talking about the Super Bowl, I guess, actually. Yeah, I guess we'll be talking about the Super Bowl. Yeah, we'll see where the NBA is. I'm sure something else will happen. Trump's inauguration is Friday. I'm sure there'll be something outside of sports, some other stuff. I'm sure something stupid is going to happen next week. It's just a matter of what at this point, Paris. So, come on, man.
Yeah.
Dude. And just real quick, I know a lot of people are talking about they aren't going to watch. I'm gonna watch because it's still history. It's the first clown ever put into the White House. We had the first black president. Now we got the first clown. I'm gonna watch just because I have a feeling he's gonna do or say something stupid, and I'd rather
at
see it myself
time,
than see it on a meme.
At some point in time, you know, he's gonna mess up some type of protocol. He might give like a left-handed salute, but he's gonna do something. And if he has
it's going to be something.
And when he opens up his mouth, he's going to say something real crazy. It's going to make everybody
exactly.
Mouth. Whoa, did he just say that? Did he really just say
exactly.
That?
And I'm going to add this before I get off of here. Just because a black person meets with the president, it doesn't make him a coon. Sorry, people. I know that's the e-scout. That's why I'm saying it now. It's the easy go-to, but my perspective is if none of us meet with him, he has an easy out to say, well, nobody met with me, so
what
was I supposed to do? No, no. What I don't approve of is who he's met with. That's my key.
Well,
I don't approve of Kanye. I don't approve of the comedian. I want some Michael Eric Dice or Mike Dyson. I think I can't mess up his middle name. Michael Dyson. I want guys that are in the community, guys that have their feet to the pavement. Those are the guys I want to talk to. People that black people in the black community respect. I'm not saying that people don't like Steve Harvey. I'm not even saying they don't respect him. But people in the hood don't respect Steve Harvey to the point that they want him being their representative. That's all I'm
saying. Let's see if this is a start or something. You know, let's see if maybe this opens doors to the other individuals that you mentioned.
It's
got to
start somewhere.
It has to start somewhere, but I think we've got to a point where we're sort of like a nation of angry black men to where, if he doesn't talk to anybody, we say shut us out, and now we talk to somebody, we say, well, we don't like who he's talking to. I mean, let's let it start and see how this thing plays out. And also remember that the president is very limited in what he can do anyway. So let's just
there's only like six things that dude can do without the okay of other people.
Right. So let's just see where, you know, it's not like you can walk into the hood and go, guess what? All crime is gone, wages hand, and I just get everybody's job. Just wait and see. Let's see how this thing plays out, and let's see what happens. So let's just see what happens. But that coon word has got to stop. It has got to, because now every black man, unless you're a radical, borderline Malcolm X, you're a coon. And I don't agree with that.
And I, Paris, I don't agree with it either. I think cats need to just take a step back, relax, you know, and see where it goes. It has to start somewhere. You can't have a conversation unless you're conversing.
Exactly.
Got to start somewhere. So, with that said, we are out of here. For my man, C-Dawg, I'm Corey G. Sports Story and other stuff. Be back next week. Everybody, until next week, take it like Darth Vader. See you out there, man. Thanks for calling in again, bro. Appreciate you listening in every week. We'll get back next week. Peace out.
Show on the radio. Yo, what's the best thing?